Dr. Prasad, I'll invite you to give the regulatory perspective on this new era of antithrombotic, namely in heart failure. And then we, because we have to also be respectful to the webcast that is ongoing, we need to wrap up right after that. And I can actually project that we're going to have the discussions during the lunch break and the ad hoc sessions later. But please.
Thank you very much. Firstly, thank you for inviting me here. I think you've sat through a number of bits of presentations and a lot of data. I will try and restrict myself to just my observations, and I will not be presenting any new data here. The question we have, we're faced with, is the heart failure potential new indication. And intuitively, I as a clinician think it's an obvious question. Why would anyone ask it? Let's look back at why. What is so intuitive, making it more difficult. You've all seen this in different forms, and I just wanted to highlight the fact that, yes, there is a thrombotic tendency in patients with heart failure. Nothing new. We've known that for a number of years, and this was written in a letter to the editor in 1998, sort of quite nicely or eloquently. The question is, what's the difficulty? In my mind, I think there are three parts. One is, do we know the exact population that we want to treat? Do we actually, have we identified their risk? I'll be clear about the endpoint, and I think you heard all my previous speakers talk about them, and I won't elaborate. And the last one is just this, is a very cryptic question. It sort of talks about which drug, which comparator. I won't go into details of this slide here. I've just tried to summarize what we've found. Let's look at the evidence. And as you see, if you go down the column down here, is first one, my response to that was, of course, we were told you so. But as you go down, the evidence becomes less and less convincing. So what do we have in summary? I won't take too long. Small trials, different endpoints, different doses of aspirin, warfarin, everything else. And its clinical benefit has not been easy to define. So we have a number of data sets which says that the evidence is debatable and inconsistent. It's more intuitive than evidence-based. And what we don't or haven't demonstrated so far is that in all the discussions is there evidence in all-cause mortality. I think what we need is confirmatory evidence. When I put the slides together, I didn't mean to agree or disagree with any of the previous speakers, but as you'll see, that I have agreed with a number of them, and especially I must point out that Dr. Zanath had eloquently described what we need to do. From a regulatory viewpoint, I can't see that I would disagree with him in any of the aspects. I think we should take heart from the fact that there is a number of opportunities. Modeling and simulation was brought up by Angelus, and I think that's an excellent point to consider. If you have data from all the other indications that we have so far utilized, perhaps we could put a little bit more effort into devising more heart failure trials using that information and generate the confirmatory evidence. And as a regulator, I can't do this. I have got to base my judgment on what evidence would present. So I wouldn't want to go by intuition, nor would I want to point out the fact that the discussion of my values are likely to be better than anybody else's. Thank you.
Thank you for those thoughtful comments. I think, is there one question? We can take 5 minutes, so okay. So there's only us between you and lunch, but Sven and then Dennis?
I think that's a very important topic that needs to be addressed. I have one thing to challenge the comparator dose in your trial design, Fayez. Do we need to have placebo-controlled on top of ASA, or should we have ASA versus an anticoagulant? Just stable disease, double therapy, increased bleeding risk. So I'm just putting this to discussion.
Well, in my opinion, it should be placebo-controlled on top of aspirin in people eligible for aspirin. And we need to adhere to recommendation guidelines because out there in real world, the aspirin is not really used in heart failure patients appropriately as per the guidelines.
But you risk bleeding, increased bleeding.
Yeah, it has been managed in many other trials in atrial fibrillation, ACS, and many other indications. It has been done. It's not going to be the first time that it would have been done.
Yeah, I think low-dose aspirin wouldn't be an issue for bleeding with in a heart failure trial. The question is getting physicians to utilize 80-90% in a heart failure trial. I think it would be more like 65% personally, but that remains to be seen.
Thank you. So one important aspect, especially in a heart failure trial with patients with renal failure, maybe it would be laboratory monitoring of new drugs, either from inhibitors or anti-10A agents, to define therapeutic range and maybe know if a patient is overdose age. Don't you think that's an important point to consider together with biomarkers that will give you an overall view of coagulation such as D-dimers or TAT and so on? What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure that the biomarkers would help during the trial, but certainly collecting, and actually as Kit slide on ancillary studies, and this was just to advocate for collecting samples and a specific sample on site rate. I know that in order to examine evidence of thrombotic pathophysiology, we need to have specific samples. So certainly this would be a great learning opportunity, and I would not advocate more to have these kind of biomarker embedded into the main trial.
If I could say just one word about the renal failure. Patients with renal failure don't bleed excessively on rivaroxaban. We have a lot of experience in, so that it's not as big an issue clinically that one may think, even though there's about 30% is cleared by the kidney directly.
Thanks. Dr. Prasad?
I just wanted to make an observation that there appears to be some belief that physicians are reluctant to use aspirin in together with other anticoagulants. If you look at the Euro Heart Failure Survey, 77% of those patients who were diagnosed with heart failure were on one form of antithrombotic drug or the other. So I don't think that that is really borne out by the evidence that we have, that they're very reluctant to use it. So we ought to make use of that opportunity and see where the difference lies and where the combination will be beneficial.
Even if you admit the risk of thromboembolism in heart failure, it's very difficult to organize a study because it's a very heterogeneous population. There are a lot of problems. For the time, Rotterdam study showed that the risk of thromboembolism is huge in the first year after the diagnosis, but afterwards it's flat. Second, what about the patients with intraventricular thrombus versus those without intraventricular thrombus? What about the patients with low ejection fraction versus those with normal ejection fraction, which we don't have exactly? So it should be organized maybe for the small populations, such a study.
Well, I believe we have covered part of this. Certainly the intraventricular thrombi, if you know of this, it's a clear indication, so this patient should be excluded. LVEF, we'd rather go for a low ejection fraction because the various analyses you have seen and the accumulated data that this may be a better eligible subgroup of patient. But we are not ignoring the difficulties of this as much as any heart failure trial, even with heart failure drug, but we did manage to provide significant advances in this area, although the disease is indeed very heterogeneous.
Can I just say one thing about with rivaroxaban? And rivaroxaban has not been studied in patients with GFR below 30. There have been some patients, and that's a big issue in heart failure. The FDA were interested in looking at GFRs down to 15, but that's something that would have to be negotiated if and when a heart failure trial is initiated.
Okay, everything has an end, even an adaptive study. So we should close the session because there are others. Not before thanking to all the panelists, all the speakers, to the public, and of course to the participants to the webcast from so many countries like Russia, Ukraine, China, and others. Thank you again. It was a successful meeting.